Natural Solutions with Dr. J, your source for time-tested and cutting-edge natural medicine approaches to optimize your health, with your host, Dr. J. Sordian.
Do it this way, too. The audio is good. I like to double.
Yeah, there you
double
go. There you things. Go. Yeah. Yeah.
So thank you so much for agreeing to this interview.
My privilege.
And so I'm speaking with Michelle Pope.
Yes.
And you are the CEO.
Yes.
Of ASAP.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So you've been CEO for a number of years.
6 years.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Time flies.
And you've done all these other positions there too.
Yes. Right. Yes. Program director, marketing director, fundraiser.
Wow.
Deputy director.
Wow. Yeah. Fantastic.
Yeah, it is.
And I've noticed also you've been on television.
Yes, I had my own television show where we talked about aging and doing it in a dignified way. And kind of taking that whole idea of seniorhood to elderhood,
which is interesting.
Yeah. And now the radio show, we do that on that as well. Yeah.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
So, but you've also been on, like, not only your own
on
show.
On other shows. Yes. Yeah. I have. Yeah.
I noticed that too, so that's wonderful.
Yeah.
So, I would say what I'm doing, I'm working on a book. Final stages of research called Super Brain, Maximize Your Brain Health for a Better Life.
Okay.
And I've appeared on various TV stations around the country and everything, promoting that too, but also talking about ways to prevent Alzheimer's, things that one can do to avoid that. And so my publisher wants me to speak to experts in the field like yourself to find out what things you're finding most effective for people who do have dementia, perhaps to maintain the highest level of functioning that one can with that.
Okay.
But perhaps there's also other things that you know of or learned related to how to, for even like staff, keeping them from getting burnt out trying to keep their memory very healthy. With all this experience as the head, what kind of things?
So one of the things that I'm finding, particularly working with people in the early stages, because one of the things that we do is have an early stage support group.
All right, very good.
And I still facilitate that. That's the one hands-on thing that I get to do now, which is wonderful. And I find those folks, because they've just been diagnosed, they're still able to navigate their world pretty well. Using technology is something as simple as their cell phone to put in their address so that if they are going to the grocery store that it will talk to them and navigate them back home even if they're walking.
Interesting.
And so we've done that with a few people where they've used their phone. With depression, we have found that there's a few of them who get really depressed, particularly over here where it seems to be gray and cold and damp at sometimes. And we've tried the happy light, believe it or not. And it was one of the people in the group who had been using it for years to combat her depression, 30 minutes every morning. And she brought it in. Hers was huge because she got it actually from Belgium. And I went and got little ones and tested it with a group of the folks during the hour and a half that we're in the group. For that last half hour, the people who are the most depressed or seem to have symptoms of depression, they have the happy light in front of them.
Oh, interesting. And so this is like seasonal affective disorder type lights.
Yes, exactly. And they're all reporting. Now, is it placebo? I don't know. It doesn't matter if it works. Yeah. And they're all saying, you know, that 30 minutes in the morning, that extra light while they're drinking their coffee, doing whatever, has helped them. And I'm finding now they're like $35. You can buy them at Staples. I mean, they have these little desk-sized ones. And so we purchase some for the folks in our group. We find that. Find socialization is...
And so that's primarily for the early stage? How about later stage?
Well,
is that
we're going to try it now.
Are you going to try it now?
I'm going to try it now.
Right,
because
exactly.
I had just... This is something we just did, and and it was... The reason it really became important to me is because this lady also has a dual diagnosis of schizophrenia. And so she has schizophrenia, dementia, and then the depression overlying.
Wow.
And I thought, we've got to do something because they were over-medicating her. And it's working. Her brother is reporting less tearfulness. She signed a contract with me that she would use it every day, and it's working. So...
Great.
Again,
that's a great tip. That's wonderful.
Also, socialization. I think that most of them are telling me, particularly in the early stages, once they get diagnosed, they themselves begin to separate from the people that they normally hung out with, their peeps, their circle.
Yeah.
And coming to the early stage group where people have like problems, they're able to socialize in a way where we go to the museum together, we'll go out to dinner together, we'll go to a theater together, but everybody has some memory problems.
Yeah.
So they're not feeling like, and I'm the only one that supposedly does it.
Right.
And we go, so they're not feeling like, oh, you know, so-and-so has to wait for me, or I can't remember where the bathroom is, so I'm afraid to ask anybody. Right. So we're able to have social events where they're out being just like normal people, for lack of a better way of saying it. And they're reporting back to me that they're feeling fulfilled.
Because
they're picking the activities. I'm not picking the activities, which is the model, you know, that most of us who provide any kind of congregate care, we're the ones choosing what they do.
Right, right.
Whereas I think having the choice, having the socialization, being able to go out in the evening without having to worry how to drive, or even being separate from your caregiver, who is constantly there, and and so I think that's a big deal for them. And we do a field trip once of, it's an 8-week session, and with once and within the 8 weeks, we decide where we want to go, whether it's lunch, whatever. And I think they love doing that, and they love hanging out and making the decisions. Technology is working for them; they're all on the computer, and so they've created their own gratitude peer group where they're talking to each other daily, or finding someone hasn't responded and they'll call me and say, so-and-so's not responding to the emails. Do you know if anything's going on? So they're creating their own support system. And I think, to me, that is wonderful, because if we can enable people to live within their own disease process and be actively engaged and involved in it without an outside source, that's incredible.
No, very, very important, because it establishes additional autonomy and that feeling of independence and having control over your life, which
is, we all live for.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's very true.
We all live for that.
We all do.
I mean, I know I do.
And so you mentioned something about gratitude.
So they're doing gratitude journals, because one of the things that happens, and you know this, when people begin to get losing their memory and they forget to remember things, or they forget somebody that they love, they start to become introverted and within themselves. And so I always say to them, but take a moment, because there's still some, the three T's, time, treasure, and talent, that you're able to engage and be involved in. Take a moment just to think about that one thing. What did you do well today? There's something that you did well that you didn't need any help with. Write it down. So just don't rely on your memory. Write it down. So the next day when you're feeling depressed and whatever, that you can look back and say, well, shoot, 24 hours ago, I did this, this, and this. I'm going to try that again, instead of looking at it as the can'ts. You know, the disease of
that's
of dementia.
So important. Even if you don't have memory issues, it's like a key in all the self-motivation, the self-improvement programs and all. It's actually focusing on the positive things.
Yes.
Because apparently our survival brain is looking actually for negative events to say, wow, I survived that.
Right. That's
fine. Rather than looking at all the positive and building up all the positive things. So this is great to hear that this is working really well
and
too.
And again, I think a part of it is that I'm trying to connect with the person that they are becoming. I'm not trying to connect with the person that their family members are trying to remember.
Yes, right.
And
right.
So I don't have that history, even though I have it in paper.
Right.
I'm trying to say, okay, who is Michelle today? And what is her dreams? What are her visions, and how do I help to manifest those so that this independent human being who lived to be still has that sense in this world. And we recently just partnered with a church over in Concord where we actually did our first spiritual non-denominational, for lack of a better word, service. And it was so amazing to see these
people.
That
was there in Concord.
It was in Concord, and I helped to write it, the whole thing. It was 30 minutes long, because we knew anything longer than that, not worth it.
Right.
A lot of music, old hymns, and the sermon was based, or the talk, presentation right. was based on lifting the self-esteem of the individual in the room who had the dementia, as well as giving the caregiver an opportunity to do something that they normally cannot do because they can't leave their loved one on a Sunday.
Daycare centers are closed
unless they have someone that will come in. We had a person that came up to us in the moderate stages, and she said, I haven't been able to go to church in a long time, and I know, and it was in a little chapel, not in a big church. And she said,
and would that create more security and comfort?
It created more comfort, more security. It wasn't this massive place. We didn't have a choir. It wasn't, it was one person playing the piano. We picked three songs, and she just said, oh, this was so great for me. When will you do this again? So it was a pilot. I had convinced our my minister at my church to do this with me, and so now we're going to offer it in the community once a month, beginning with a carol sing that for people with Alzheimer's and dementia or any form of cognitive decline, because again they get separated from the things that gave them sense of meaning and a sense of purpose, and so if we can do it, capsulize it, do it in a way where it sensory. And we had candles and lavender, and I mean, it was just this sensory.
So it's a multi-sensorial experience, too. It's not just visual or auditory, but also olfactory.
Yes,
and,
all of it.
Oh, fantastic.
And then
that's
at
great.
The end, again, we didn't want to make it, it's a Methodist church, so we didn't want people to feel like we were proselytizing to them. So we said, we're not going to pray at this time, but we're just going to lift up words of encouragement. Everybody have a word of encouragement, and then they hugged. And I got so many notes from people just saying, because I wasn't able to be there to see it, but it was an incredible experience for even our pastor, who said, oh my gosh, I had no idea, but he looks out into his congregation and he goes, I get it now. Because he said he looks out and he sees people who look glazed over.
Right.
And we're now realizing that maybe some of those people might actually have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's dementia or not diagnosed yet, but just not able to follow.
Ah, so these are people already in his congregation, not the special congregation. Ah,
no,
interesting.
No, and we put it out to the world. So some other people came. The font of the program was an 1824 font. So
people could
read without assistance.
Right.
The way it was set up, my goal was, if their caregiver doesn't want to stay, how can this person, again, be independent in this activity and feel like I'm doing this?
Right.
Because everything about their life is about you and me. If you were my caregiver, everything now has to be you and me. When right now in my life, I have solitary moments that I enjoy and love and function very well, but the dementia or the Alzheimer's marries you to a person that maybe you're married to, but you don't want to be married to them 24/7.
Right,
so
exactly.
I think autonomy, anything that promotes autonomy and anything that helps individuals to see that there is life beyond dementia, that's what you know. Dr. Taylor always says, he goes, you know, the Alzheimer's is not the destination, it's the journey. And he always says, help me to live in the here and now. Don't keep trying to push me to the next phase when I'm not there.
Right.
And then your earlier question, or a part of the question, was about how do you keep, you know, with staff. We're really working with the staff on burnout. And one of the things that we've started to do in the morning is have our, during our flash meetings, I'm a big yoga and Tai Chi person. And so I wish.
Fantastic. That's great.
It's real, and so I'm like, okay, you guys, let's stretch. Yeah. Let's breathe, you know, teaching them how to breathe well, you know.
Breathing is so key for so many aspects of the body.
People
and
do not breathe.
That's so true.
I was realizing, I'm like, no wonder they're tired by 1 o'clock. They're not breathing. They're shallow breathers. They're excited breathers, but they do not breathe. And then we did an exercise where as a team, we all started to try to breathe in the rhythm of each other, to realize that as a team, there's a natural rhythm that we all take on together, and that we need to depend on that rhythm and not try to be solitary in the room when we're trying to assist somebody. It's okay if somebody comes and helps. And then we took away some of the stringent, you know, the policies and procedures of providing care, which I know you're very aware of, sometimes prevent you from being in the moment with a person.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Because you're talking about the staff working there in the having to take people to the bathroom and all the other things in the food, etc.
It all has to be done within a schedule, within a policy, within a procedure.
Right.
And so you get tunnel vision, yes. Like the horses in New York. That's what it reminds me of. You can still drive, you can still ride, but you're still looking this way.
Exactly.
And so I've given them permission to take the blinders off.
Mm.
And I'm like, if lunch takes 2 hours,
right.
I don't care.
Right.
If people want to exercise for an hour and a half, don't switch the activity.
Mm.
And if the state walks in and says you need to have two activities within a 3 hour period, I'll fight that war.
Right.
Because
right.
the reality
you
is,
shifted activities in the middle. I mean,
yes.
Like, you know,
I
right.
mean, how many? Yeah. If I mean, I don't go bike riding and then all of a sudden, you know, a little buzzer go off and go, okay, my 30 minutes is up. If I'm feeling it and it feels good,
right.
I'm going to do 45, an hour.
Yeah.
So I said, if it feels good, let them do it. Let them feel the freedom of having it. Let them roam around the program.
Uh-huh.
Open the patio door. If somebody wants to go outside, let them go outside.
Right.
You can see them.
Mm-hmm.
But we were constricting them for safety.
Absolutely. It's an important concern.
You know,
yeah.
Important
yeah.
concern. But, you know, one of the participants said to me, she said, if I fall and break my hip while I'm dancing, that would be a good break.
Right.
And I thought, wow, wow. And we're taking that away from her.
Yeah.
And so we had to figure out a way that she could get up and dance in her walker without feeling like she couldn't do that when everybody else was getting up and dancing. Mm. Freely. And so it's being in the moment with people and being mindful. Like I said to the staff, stop thinking about all the policies and the procedures. Let me worry about that. You be in the moment with that participant, with that individual, so that you can enjoy your job. If you start to think of it as I got to do the A through the Z with this person, you're too busy rushing to B. When A may just be where you need to be,
mm-hmm.
and it's okay, and I give you permission for it to be okay. And I think that's a part of our institutional system. We don't give people permission to be the best friend with the patients that we serve. We don't give them permission to be human beings with them, but this is a human being
right.
that we're
uh-huh.
servicing.
Uh-huh.
And so I think that has helped a lot. Also making sure that they get on our computers now, we put timeouts so that people are required to take time out. The computer actually shuts down for 10 seconds
all right. uh-huh.
so that they can get up and walk around. For the people that are on computers, for the nurses, we've added...
This is staff.
This
we're
is staff.
Still, yeah.
All staff.
Yeah.
Added additional nurses so that the nurse doesn't
uh-huh.
have to feel like her paperwork. We're getting tablets so that when they're out on the floor, they don't have to feel like they have to run back
right,
to their
right,
office
right.
to document.
Uh-huh.
So just making it so that there's an ease.
Because there is a lot of paperwork to do. Oh.
An incredible... I just don't even... I have no clue
exactly,
why.
Exactly.
I mean, and it's repetitive paperwork.
Uh-huh,
this
uh-huh.
is the thing that I'm, as a strategic planner, I think, really? Why?
Right.
You know, but again, we have to do it. It's a part of our
That's
reimbursement,
right.
what
uh-huh.
we do. But I've given them permission to look at it from a different way.
Mm-hmm.
I've given them the tools, technology,
to
which I never thought that
floor.
I would
yeah.
love,
uh-huh.
Is helping them on the floor
yeah.
so they don't walk back and forth. We're giving them exercise. We're doing more things where a young woman, Julie Interante from up in Sacramento, we came down and we had a spiritual ceremony that, again, non-denominational,
right.
where people learned how to meditate and do it in 1 second. Like if you're having a bad
oh,
day
yeah.
and a participant is having a bad day, you're having a bad day. How do we stop and not react to that? And we stop looking at behaviors as things we needed to change.
Mm.
I think this is another
yeah.
thing. When people are living with dementia, they cognitively change. They sometimes have behaviors that look weird to us, but they're behaviors that if we pay attention, they're telling us there's a story. And so we've taken that away too, saying, no, don't look at it. We took the word challenging out, challenging behaviors, modification, all
right.
that weirdness. And we said, no, the person's trying to talk to you. If it were a 2-year-old kid, you'd be down there trying to figure it out.
Right.
We don't want you to
treat
them like...
And there's a lot of analogies with that.
Totally.
Yeah, yeah.
And I said, don't treat them like a child, but stop thinking that you know already what's wrong, because you don't.
Right.
you know, and I think it's changing the way we provide care. You know, I don't think we're perfect yet. I don't think there's such a thing, but I do think that we're transforming, and therefore the people, I see a sense of calmness in them. I see more ability. We're giving them computers to work with to see if they can navigate them. We're working with UC Berkeley and some incredible students up at the technology labs to think about things that we can bring into the program that will help people to be better engaged and involved. I just went out and bought a bunch of hearing aid batteries for half of my participants because we found out they have hearing aids that don't have batteries in them. They can't hear. So just increasing the sensory stuff that they have so that they can engage with a quality of life that makes sense to them where they are and not trying to flip them back. You know, it's like it's that whole disease. And again, from my theology training, it's like the body is a disease, so let's fix the disease. But no, maybe you can't fix the disease. We already know Alzheimer's is not curable as we know it today. So what can we do now to make it better? You know, the cooking classes. You know, the participants make their own snack. So instead of a cooking class where you make something and then the ingredients disappear, never see them again, that's weird. You know, and so we brought it back and they're like, oh, so they get to serve it. And they're like, okay, this is what happened to the food I chopped up instead of throwing it away. You know, and so, they wear gloves for sanitary reasons and you modify it, but try to make the day more of a day that a real human being would live and not a day that, you know, that we think sick people need to live. And I think that's a philosophy switch for us even, where we were doing to and taking care of. Now we're saying, how do we become a part of your reality? How do we become, we're using best friend approaches and things. We're using culture change. We're using a little bit of all of it. And if it were you, and that's the question I asked them, if it were you and I took you in the bathroom and I just pulled your pants down without telling you what I was going to do, even if you needed my assistance, what would you do to me? And they all, one of them said to me, I would call 911 because you're violating me. Oh, okay. So I think it's also helping staff to realize that one day we may all go that road. It may not be to the degree of the people that are with us today because we know things are changing. And again, brain health stuff is helping a lot of people. We do brain exercises with our early stage folks, and I see that it makes a difference. But I do think it's treating people the way we want to be treated is fundamentally
very important.
Where we should start.
For the staff, too. So you have how many facilities? How many locations?
We now have three locations.
Three, all right.
Fremont is coming online after the first of the year. That's where I was this morning. And Fremont actually is a testament to all of the things that we've been talking about in the last few minutes because that's what we did there. We opened up the spaces. We have a garden where activities will be in the garden, out where there's pathways where people can wander.
Because it's a much larger space.
Much larger space. And lit and light. And we have actually in the bathroom, we put happy lights in the bathroom, the happy light. So that when people are washing their hands, they're getting exposed.
Oh, that's great.
We just did things that we knew would be different for them and created a space that didn't look institutional.
Wow.
All the stuff is hid on purpose. You know, the staff is not going to like it because they're going to have to look for it all. But but I wanted people to walk in. And, you know, when I walk into a hospital for care, I know I'm in a hospital. When I walk into my home, I know I'm in my home. I wanted them to walk into their home or a place that they could call home. And then the hospital stuff just be there if they need it.
That's wonderful.
So that was the difference with the Fremont site versus the other two, which are good sites, but, you know, a different time. Yeah. You know, this one's 27 years old. The other one's 16 years old. And we just, this one's only 6 months old. You know, so it just makes a big difference. But I do think going into the future, you know I have in my early stage people are doing the coconut oil. They're cooking with it.
Does that seem to be helping?
Some of them say it does. I actually do it too. Since I did it. One of the ladies is doing pomegranate juice. She thinks that, you know, she's changed her diet from being totally meat and all of that and fatty stuff. So she's lost weight. The blood pressure's come down. Her diabetes has changed. She feels she's sharper.
Oh, that's good. Yeah.
And so she's feeling sense. That some of those things that were inhibiting some of the brain flow, oxygen and all of that,
uh-huh.
now that those things are under control, she says she feels better.
Fantastic.
She still has the diagnosis,
right.
but she feels better.
Mm-hmm.
She just went back to Bali. She's an interesting story. She's early stage, still functioning. She does the happy light for 30 minutes a day. She works on the computer for 45 minutes a day. She does word puzzles. She went to Bali. So we by herself.
Yeah.
And we set up everything for her. Wrote down everything. We took photographs. She got a photo album of what each airport was going to look like and so forth, even though we hooked her up with a person
wow.
to meet her. And she did it, and she came back on her own. And an incredible journey for this woman whose mini mental score states that she probably shouldn't be able to do that.
Oh, interesting.
Okay.
Interesting.
And then we had a gentleman who was a professor at Chabot College for many philosophy professor.
Mm-hmm.
He just recently passed away. We just saw his pathology. And the pathology said that he had the worst Alzheimer's that they could possibly have seen. He had had multiple strokes in the last couple of years. They said he should not have been able to do any kind of cognitive memory, anything. Okay. He was with our program until 48 hours before he passed away. We were talking about Nietzsche. We were reading philosophy books. There was no way. When I saw his pathology the day of his funeral, because I did his eulogy, I had to change my eulogy because I said to them, that's not the man I know. That pathology shows that he shouldn't have been able to do anything. And he knew his grandchildren's names. He could sing. We had an incredible conversation about religion because he was an atheist. And so we started talking about whether there was a being or this was 48 hours before he passed away.
Wow.
So we have to be careful how we treat people because
mm-hmm.
this is a gentleman who was very aware of everything was going on.
Wow.
And I even asked for a copy of the pathology
right.
because I'm using it now in stories that I'm telling just like today.
Fantastic.
Because
that's great. Yeah.
He was still very capable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Very interesting.
Yeah. I know. When I read that, I mean, he really shouldn't have been able to do anything. He was still going to the bathroom and everything on his own.
Uh-huh.
Queuing.
So, uh-huh.
But.
So, brain scans and all don't tell the whole story.
I don't think
there's a lot more resilience and potential that the brain has for figuring out how to do functions, exactly.
I think that's what you're saying.
That's right.
And again, we didn't have a chance to really talk about your book, you and I, but I just think the human brain, the human spirit, you combine those two things together, it is amazing what an individual can do. And I think, and his wife won't mind me saying, Alan Rife was a prime example of that because I sat there dumbfounded that was the same man we
exactly.
were talking about.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Powerful. This has been great. I appreciate your time very much. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. And then I got to have you come on the show to talk about your book.
I'd love to.
Let me give you my card so that you, because these are kind of.
If you're interested in finding out more about how you or your relatives can avoid dementia, buy the book, Outsmarting the Dementia Epidemic. 7 key memory care actions to avoid Alzheimer's and successfully keep your brain safe, sharp, and sexy into the future by going to outsmartingdementia.com. That's outsmartingdementia.com. Thank you so much. Information can also be found on naturalsolutionswithdrj.com.